This is Kobe Carey pappin' kettlebells with Bo, where flavor meets fitness, so welcome to the show. This is an event where we interview the experts, top coaches, athletes, all the keys to get to work for the balanced life that we all looking for. Swinging kettlebells overhead, we rising from the floor. I'ma hand it off to Bo so he can set the vibe, so when you rate the pod, nothing less than a 5.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Thank you for coming in, Steve. It's 5 a.m. in Singapore. So
wow, early bird, getting the word, man.
Yeah, man. So it's you had just finished your lunch?
No, I actually haven't. I haven't had any food today. Just drinking some water, a little bit of limeade.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah, so, I don't usually eat till.
Oh, you don't usually.
Maybe eat. After we talk, yeah, maybe after we talk, I'll have something. I'm not to eat too much.
So I've heard you are a vegan. Are you a vegan, Steve?
Yeah, since 5 years ago.
Oh, okay. So you are still continuing your vegan diet till today?
Yeah.
All right, it's nice to hear. So how's your day goes by, all the vegan diet that you take? Is it very difficult to prepare?
No, not at all. I don't cook very extravagant meals myself. So if I have my wife cooking for me, for example, it'll be a little bit more difficult to prepare. So I'm very simple. I eat, you know, fruits, vegetables, beans, rice, salad, nuts, seeds. I'm pretty much of a minimalist in how I do it.
So what's your take about the different type of diet fats, which is actually around in the world right now? Like I heard about keto and all the other different type of diet. So what's your take about that?
People are always wanting to improve. It's our nature. We want to try to grow, try to progress, try to learn, try to improve some part of life. So naturally, nutrition is one of the fundamental things that we require for existence. There's just a few fundamental instincts, and eating is near the top in terms of, you know, there's fight and flight.
Uh-huh.
And then it's like, what's next? Eating. And then, you know, reproduction. Of course, there's different, you know, you said fads. Yes, there's fads, but I personally believe that what's old is new in most things. It may be considered fad just because of the nature of the communication and the integration of social media. So you have maybe information that exists and maybe certain people know about it, but the large majority don't know anything about it. And then they find out about it. And now it's like, oh, this is the best thing ever. So I don't really get caught up in that. What I believe overall, the discussion needs to turn away from, oh, this is the right diet. No, this is the right diet. Oh, you have to eat meat. No, you have to be vegan. Oh, you have to fast. No, fasting's bad, right? So lots of smart people, everyone, if they're smart and they know how to present arguments, you can have guys presenting an argument in nutrition that have opposite views. And if you listen to one, you'll find yourself, oh, okay, that makes a lot of sense. And you listen to the other, you'll be like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. But when you see the division, it's like, okay, I'm choosing sides. So it's like, if I think that this guy is smart, then I have to disagree with everything this guy's saying, or I maybe have to dislike that person, right? So that's the difficulty when we bring up the topic of nutrition. I study nutrition. I study for myself. I would say I know some things, but I don't offer it as a service. I don't present myself as a nutrition quite because it's a very complex, and I feel that it's a big responsibility. And I think that it's not a simple matter to just say, oh, you have to eat these foods. And no, because there's individual differences. So you have to kind of look one by one. Yes, there's good elements and lots of things, keto, this, but what I believe is you have to optimize your body. That's the point. Every person has to optimize their own performance.
Okay.
In the nutrition, you know, so I can't really say 100% for you that, oh, you need to eat this and you need to not eat that. I can't really say that. And if you're very much scientific in the sense of data-driven science, because some people, they consider themselves scientists, but that's just the way to say that they trust the data. That is not all there is to science, right? Ultimately, we want to get to the point where, because mathematics, numbers, the numbers don't lie, right? So mathematics is the superior science in the sense that it doesn't change with new information. you know, 2 + 2 is going to remain 4, regardless of what religion or language or beliefs, right? Because it's not based on, whereas most of the other sciences, it's very influenced by, oh, coffee's bad for you. Oh, no, no. We just come to learn that now coffee's good for you. Okay, well, who's paying for this knowledge, right? Oh, Starbucks funded a study. Okay, coffee's good for you. And I'm a dude that is working. So I'm a scientist and I get paid to do research. And it's like, oh, here's the research you're going to do, right? So you see, there's a lot of corruption in all of this. And it's a lot of, it's not intentional because everyone is doing their best, but it's like we go with what we know and what we're exposed to. So when you're talking about nutrition, like I find what works well for me. Mm-hmm. And you develop sensitivities. And it's like, you know, if you seek, you shall find in anything. So if you're truly interested in nutrition, put in the work. Okay, where do I start? Journal. That's where you start. You write down everything you eat. I ate this much, these foods at this time, right? And now you write, how'd you feel? Well, I had upset stomach. Oh, okay. Asterisk. There's a little notation there. And now, okay, one day, no big deal. But over a month, now you start seeing the patterns. Oh, wow. I ate this food 12 times this month and I didn't eat any vegetables. You know what I'm saying? So then now you start collecting data and it's like, okay, my body responds like this to this food, and you have to isolate it because you do like a buffet and, oh, I'm having all these things together. Oh, I feel sick. You have no idea. So it's like, okay, I'm going to eat like just fish and okay, oh, my body, all that, or I'm going to eat just only salad for, you know, a period of, or whatever it is. You learn to isolate and now you know, okay, my body responds well to these foods. It doesn't respond well to those foods. And that's just the, you know, the, it's very complex because there's the chemical. It's biochemical. And what is the chemistry that produces the reactions of, you know, and what are the reactions? Well, I guess that's for each person to say. The athlete is looking for the diet that enables them to have a better chance to win. Health is not the most important thing to a dedicated athlete in terms of professional or high level amateur. I'm not talking about, oh, I'm athletic, you know, I work out. I'm saying if you're truly, if that's your thing, you're an athlete. An athlete, the only thing, the most important thing in the world is winning, right?
Yep, that's right.
I will sacrifice my health. I will take 10 years off of my life. I will sacrifice my relationship. You know, I won't have a relationship because I'm training. So that's one point, nutrition and performance, okay? And then you have, and maybe on a lesser level, just daily for regular people, like I just want to, okay, so how do you quantify that? It's not so much by winning. It's I want to feel good. I want to not be in pain. You know, I want to be able to take a healthy, can I say shit? Can I say that on this podcast?
It's fine.
Shit in the morning. I don't want to be constipated, right? I don't want to have diarrhea. I don't want to have upset stomachs, indigestion. If every time you eat, you're like, oh, that was good. And now you're like stuffed. I can't move for 2 hours. Okay, well, what is your value in life? If that's, you know, and so there's emotional things about nutrition, a lot of it. It's like, oh, I have a hard life or I have a good life. And it's like my grandmother used to make that for me, right? I love my grandmother. So now there's an emotional connection to that food. That food may not even be healthy for you. But, you know, your grandmother in like 1940s and 50s, the food was different than, right? They actually had real food back then. It wasn't like fake food. Like, you know, and again, different countries and different thing, different standards. America, I believe, has probably the worst standard because America created the entire corporate structure and the food industry and corrupted the industry because food, like our ancestors, there was no industry. It was farming. Then they figured, okay, you make money and it's like, I sell you some bushel of corn and I buy like bartering and stuff like that. But we've moved so far away from that. And we're trying to find our way in this crazy, and you have all this marketing and stuff. Oh, this is, you know, you need this. And I didn't know a lot of stuff. When I became vegan, it changed everything. It's because I'm not saying I don't need food. I eat for sure, but it's like my emotional connection to food. It's like, I don't really have that anymore. Like I once did. And it's not like I ever had a huge, like some people, especially certain cultures, like Italians, for example, like there's very strong food cultures where the food is more important versus like if you're living in like New York City, you might be grabbing something from Starbucks, eating it while you're reading a paper on the subway. You know what I'm saying? So it's not like, our family, we're sitting together around the campfire as a family and we're eating and we're talking and we're telling stories. You see, this is, we descend from that.
Correct.
And
everything changes.
Now it's like, what's on TV? And you plop down with a plate of the microwave and all this stuff. It's like TV dinners. Don't interrupt your busy, productive day with the nuisance of food. So it's like, where do you begin? So I think simple. I think simplify. You start removing things from your diet. You start, can I still function at a high level, maybe with less food, for example? And I feel that you can. I feel most people eat too much. Now, a bodybuilder can look at me. I'm 50 years old. Okay, bodybuilder can look at me maybe and go like, you're thin, you're lean. Yeah, like I'm thin, I'm lean, but I'm not a bodybuilder. You know what I mean? But I can, I don't do steroids. You know, when I was 30 years old, I was bigger. I was eating meat and stuff. I was like eating everything. I only became a vegan when I was 45. So I definitely got smaller, but I also got leaner. If you ask me, did it affect my performance in a negative way? No, I would say it increased my performance because the only area that was less is my body mass and my maximal strength. If I were to do like a one rep max. But the thing about it is I don't really care about body mass. I care about skill. Because a highly trained little guy is going to dominate the poorly trained big guy every time. Jiu-jitsu or whatever, jiu-jitsu is even more. That's the art for the small person. I'm not trying to get into that saying, jiu-jitsu is like the best, because it's not. It's about the person. But I'm just saying that science, if you're talking about as a younger man, I'm like, I hope everybody respects me. You know, like not necessarily trying to get as big as possible, but like, boom, I'm going to be a strong guy. And you want that respect. But it's like at 50 years old, I don't care about that.
Yeah.
I've already proven. I keep to myself when I'm teaching, I share. But it's like I'm not trying to find myself in the world where I'm looking for, notice me. It's stages of development. It's
correct.
So anyway, I know it's about nutrition. I'm kind of going in a totally different direction. But
no, I think it's fine. Yeah.
The nutrition is like, there's certain things that we know for sure that we can, like, let's say I have a lot of experience and a lot of health and wellness lifestyle that I've lived for, over decades, right? So it's very different for me than, let's say, someone that maybe is doing other things in life, but they might have really poor nutrition. They may not have a lot of knowledge about nutrition, then they're looking for nutrition information. I think that's probably what you were coming from with that question.
Yep, that's right.
And so the take home that I want to leave with that is, let's start with the things that we can eliminate. Let's start with the things that we know are not nutritious. And at some level, we know that they're causing destruction. You may not know how much, but like, we know soda is unhealthy. Everybody knows that.
Of course.
Okay. McDonald's and KFC, and we know that that is not nutritious. And maybe you're innocent and you don't know the degree of poison that it actually is. And that's not anybody's fault. It's what we've grown up to. But there is corruption in the food industries. That's the reality. And we have to understand that those multinational companies do not care about us. McDonald's doesn't care if your children are healthy. Okay. They care about the shareholders. And that's the difficulty of society that we have to be able to transcend. All of it. The medicine. Some countries are better than others. Okay, in terms of how they look after the people. But some countries are very bad in that way. And especially when you have big populations, it's different. Oh, we have 5,000 people. We're an amazing country. Yeah, like Switzerland and places like this. Singapore, there's some great countries, but they're very small. So it's a lot easier
to manage. Yeah.
U.S. has at least 350 documented people, and we don't know how many. U.S. is a very big million, very big population. So these challenges, it's hard to really put in a national sense, but individually, we have to be able to identify, okay, these sodas and these fast foods and these cakes and these pastries and these quick, if it's quick, it's not probably good. If it's quick and easy.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't want it easy, I want it good. And if you want it good, probably it's diametrically opposed from easy. like the easier it is, the, you know,
you can't get the best of both worlds. Yeah,
but it's the responsibility of a person to educate themselves, and what, and you can kind of, the basic stuff is obvious, like, you know, the bad stuff, like, don't eat Snickers for lunch, you know, don't grab a, eat food. To eat food. Okay, now you're eating food. Now we can start discussing, okay, is it better to eat meat or not? We can start, and then you find your way. And maybe, I don't say that everyone needs to choose to be vegan. I don't say that.
Yeah.
I say you do what's, I know for me, it was a great decision. And it helped me in a lot of ways, mentally, physically, and emotionally. But yeah. I understand a lot of people have had difficulty with it. And it's all about education. It's all about learning and how can I find nutrition from the foods that I'm eating. And it's just ongoing like that. So, you know, I never take the short route and be like, oh, yeah, just do keto and or, oh, yeah, just intermittent fasting. Okay, that's a start, I guess, an entry point.
Yeah,
but it's not like, okay, all your problems are solved. You still have to make it your own. You have to do the fad, do the trend, try it, see how your body responds. And now, okay, how can I make it even better? And keep training and not and educating yourself, you know?
Yeah, that's right. You earlier mentioned about jiu-jitsu. So I believe your background is actually in martial arts. So is jiu-jitsu the martial arts that you have been training now?
Now, for the last 2.5 years, jiu-jitsu. I came to jiu-jitsu later in life when I was, you know, 40, I guess 47 when I started training, or no, 48. And so basically I started when I was 12 years old in the Chinese martial arts. I started studying Chinese Kung Fu and actually the Taoist. If you know some about, you know, the different martial arts, the Chinese is many different styles, many different traditions. You have like the Buddhist, which is the Shaolin.
Correct.
As the Buddhist, you know, and then you have the Taoist, which was, they call this the internal.
Qigong, is it related to Qigong?
Qigong, yeah. Qigong is a component. Neigong is a component. You have Chinese medicinal, you know, the five elemental. Actually, that's kind of for all, but, you know, you have a lot of overlap, of course. It wasn't like necessarily all pure one or pure the other, but my exposure was in the internal, the Chinese internal martial arts. And that was, you know, 12 years old. That was something that I was immersed in for, you know, my formative years. Became my first profession, you know, starting to teach on a part-time basis when I was 15. And it was just the way that my life to where, you know, when I was 17, 18, 19, that's when I was the one that was able to take on more responsibility, teach classes, learn to run the school. And so I grew up in the art in that way, in teaching. And then I, you know, I went in a different direction in my late 20s. I realized, okay, at this point, I'm not going to be teaching martial arts the rest of my life as my profession. And now I'm like a Ronin. Because now I'm a martial artist without a school and without a family. You know, my first teacher, my Sifu, right? We had a parting of ways, right? Yeah. This happens. It's like the movies, the stories. It is.
I like the way how you describe yourself after Ronin.
But it's respect. It's respect. You know, because you can't be, oh, this person. It's like I honor the art, my first teacher. It's your first teacher. So you always respect the teacher. But sometimes you have to grow and it's like now they're not your teacher anymore, but it doesn't change that they were once your teacher. They brought you to a certain point. You see what I'm saying? So at that stage in the life, I was like, okay, I'm not going to do Martin. Now I'm from 12 years old to 27. It's like 15 years uninterrupted all day, every day, you know, rest on Sunday type of thing, teaching, doing fight, you know, full contact training at night, going to the gym, running up on the mountain on my lunch break, you know, teaching classes all day, push-ups, all this stuff. Then later, you know, get into like the full contact. Oh, there's these tournaments. Let's do it. Having success in that. Then it got to just, you know, the business and stuff, and it's okay, we're not going to agree on this, and it's like that. So at that point, I decided, now what am I going to do? So then I'm like, well, let me look, go to the local college, look through the catalog, what's interesting. And I decided, oh, okay. So anyway, San Diego State University has a really good kinesiology program that aligned with my interest in physical training and strength conditioning and all of that. Because that's what I always loved about the martial arts is the conditioning, is the training. So I went in that degree. I got my degree in kinesiology. So now I'm, you know, 31 years old. I go to school when I'm, I guess, 27. still teaching martial arts part-time a little bit, just like on the weekends at the park and stuff. Still guys, that, you know, old students that wanted to stay with me and stuff like that. And
wow,
not my full-time. So then it's like, what am I going to do? How am I going to earn my living? It's fitness. It's not teaching martial arts. Now it's teaching fitness. But I'm a martial artist teaching fitness.
Correct. Yes. Yeah.
So yep. The methods, the way, the structures, all of that was informed through my early training, my early experience, you know, teaching so many different people. I ran a very successful kids class, you know, when I was probably 17, started that, you know.
Wow, that's very early.
In my 20s, you know, and had a lot of experience, you know, but teaching adults, teaching seniors, teaching Tai Chi, you know, at the assisted living center, a lot of different things like that. Hmm. And so I was an early adapter. So I'm coming out of university, you know, I have my degree and it's like, okay, what do? I get a job working in fitness. This is early, like 2001, I got my degree in kinesiology. So I was early adapter in certain things. And the Bosu, the half ball.
Oh, yes, yes. I know that. That's no, coming so from I you.
No, it doesn't come from me, but my closest friend, David Weck, is the inventor of Bosu.
Wow.
So when he invented the Bosu, he was still making it by hand, and I started working with him in promoting the Bosu all around the U.S. and the different trade shows, the IDEA, the URSA, the big fitness conventions. And that was kind of a developmental period in my, you know, now we're at 2020, so this was 20 years ago, before kettlebells even.
Yeah.
You see? So it's just a part of the experience and studying balance and working in the fitness industry, dealing with fitness convention. That's like a mainstream. And then shortly after that, the kettlebell was just popping onto the scene, like 2001. And I was seeing the kettlebell advertisements. So I was an early adapter into the kettlebell with Pavel, and, you know, because before that, no one knew anything about the kettlebell. There was no kettlebell in Malaysia or Singapore, any part of the world.
Yeah, and, it started, you know, just recently.
I'm a key player in that development, naturally, because I'm the guy that saw the opportunity and started going around the world and bringing it to where, you know, more than 60 countries now since 2006. But the point is that, you know, different stages, the martial arts, in that period, I moved from the kind of, I'm in this traditional Chinese martial arts system. I'm going to do that the rest of my life. Then it's interrupted. And then it's like, okay, there's this kettlebell. That's interesting. And so then it was like, but I didn't realize this at the time. I can only realize it now because I came back to the martial arts. Mm-hmm. So I could look backwards and see. What I did with the kettlebell is I created my own martial arts system using the kettlebell. Because the way I teach and the way I was teaching even then, it was my own style, because you learn the technique, but it's like, how are you seeing the application? And for me, it's always been martial arts. So jiu-jitsu 2.5 years ago, I came back after all that, going around the world in 60 countries for the last, you know, 15 years. And since started doing that, you know, 2007 internationally. So I was early on in kettlebells. I finally did the certification with Pavel in 2003 after training myself at home, just, you know, looking at the movements on the video and like, okay, I had all this martial art training. So it's like, I know how to stand. I know how to use my body, right? So it's like, okay, I learned the movement. So I go, Pavel, at this point, I already had perfected the movement. So he's like, oh, wow, you're... So we connected. Now I'm teaching classes with Pavel at his course, you see. And it was like that, one of the kind of early genesis of... And then it's now we're 18 years later. And now kettlebells is, you know, all around the world. Most people, if you know about fitness, you know something about kettlebells. You use it or you've seen it used, or not everybody, but if you're in gyms and if you're doing anything with fitness, for sure, you know something about the kettlebell. Being expert, that's a completely different issue. And there's a lot of people using it that maybe aren't using it well, but that's, again, not anyone's fault. It's just about access to good information. So the jiu-jitsu kind of helped me to understand that, because, and the story with that is, one of the greatest jiu-jitsu warriors ever in the history of jiu-jitsu, if any of you listeners are jiu-jitsu guys, then you for sure know the name Shanji Hibero, you know, and you know the name Salo Hibero. These are the, you know, legend, Hall of Fame, many time world champion, some of the best to ever do it, you know, Brazilians that live in, you know, US. And I'd been friends with Shanji for, you know, 12, maybe 15 years. He was coming over my house back maybe 2006. I, you know, I, through a mutual friend, And I trained him in kettlebell back then, you know, crazy lifting, you know, oh, got 56 kilos doing snatches. And so over the years, Shanji and I kept in contact, you know, and so what happened is around the time that I met Shanji, that's when I started becoming well known, because I had some DVDs on the market, and I had a particular DVD came out in 2005 that was called The Encyclopedia of Kettlebell Lifting. And it was the most extensive DVD that had ever been done on the subject. You know, to that point, certainly, and possibly still, I haven't checked, but that era is over. It was a previous era. The world
the
has
DVD
changed.
Era. Like, era.
People don't buy DVDs anymore, right? So, but at that time, I was one of the early people to do that. And it was a, you know, very extensive 9-hour, 6-DVD package for $99.99. It was 182 exercises with in-depth explanation, demonstration. And so based on that and based on the computer savvy of the producer, because I didn't have any, I still don't really have very much, but I didn't know anything back then. But he was, you know, doing business on the internet. So he was putting clips on YouTube, right? And then so I started getting emails. Oh, I'm here in Holland and I want to do a seminar with you, and you know, here in England or wherever. I went to Singapore the first time in 2007, and I went to Malaysia the first time in 2008. So in that period of mid 2000s, that's when it started happening for me. So I was flying around the world, you know, oh, go here, and you know, overseas as much or more than I was at home here in California, in San Diego. So I had known Shanji, and he was starting to do seminars in jiu-jitsu also all around. So it was like he'd travel, I'd travel, but we'd see each other maybe 3 or 4 times a year. He'd text me, hey, coach, you and town. I'd be like, hey, Shanji, you know, always respect, because I come from the martial art and it's like he's a true master of his art. So, you know, you show the respect for the level. And we were friends like that. So I would train him kettlebells and 3-4 times a year. And he always loved kettlebells, always liked to use it for his training as he was, you know, fighting in Abu Dhabi and all these different competitions. So finally, this was, you know, 2.5 years, well, I guess it was New Year's 2018, when it was just going to be 2018. So we're there working out New Year's Eve. He wants to get a great kettlebell workout before the New Year's party.
Wow.
And we're there at the university, at the Jiu-Jitsu Academy. And so older brother Salo walks in. He's like, hey, my gangster, all this. And before you know, he's like, why aren't you training Jiu-Jitsu? And I'm like, I don't know, not really sure. And he's like, well, he hands me a gi. He's like, here. I'm like, so then, next day is my first jiu-jitsu class, right?
Wow, that's fast.
You know, and it goes from there. Yeah, because it's like when the opportunity knocks on your door, you take it. When you have the opportunity to learn from one of the greatest that has ever done something, and you have an interest in. But the ironic thing is, I knew Shanji for more than 10 years. If I'd have started jiu-jitsu with Shanji 10 years, I'd be a sensei in jiu-jitsu
yep,
by now.
That's right. You'd be a master.
Sensei. Well, I'd already a sensei, but I'm not a sensei in that. I'm a sensei in what I know. One day, if I don't quit and keep practicing, you know, maybe I will get to that, to where I become a sensei in jiu-jitsu also, right? But,
yeah.
You know, but that's not really my focus at this point. And my son, so I got my son to train jiu-jitsu. So we trained jiu-jitsu together, you see. So it's full circle. And that's, the jiu-jitsu for me is much more than just the martial art and the combat. It's all the principles that are contained in the true martial art. And whether it's jiu-jitsu or any martial art, that because of essence, there is a bushido, there is a code.
Yeah, then one other thing, Steve, earlier you spoke about this kettlebell style. So I've heard there's a lot of different style, or not a lot, there's this hard style or jiro voice. So what's your take about which kettlebell style is best for whom and for, you know?
Well, the best is the best coach that has the most experience, that knows how to teach, that's going to be the best. And then whatever he wants to call his style or her.
Okay.
So again, that's another form of a distraction in the sense that it's branding. Like Giryovoy Sport is not a brand. Giryovoy Sport is a sport. So it's like if you want to compete in kettlebell, there's a actual systemized sport that's been in existence, you know, in the modern form since 1985. That was the true beginning of the modern era, where it's like, okay, these are the rules that everybody plays by. These are the kettlebells we're using, the shape. the weight, right? Mm-hmm. That's the systemized. Prior to that, the sport existed, but it was like, you know, if you're in Malaysia, your Malaysian kettlebell, it's got a handle that looks like that. And over here in Lithuania, the handle's different. So if I travel to you, I never used your equipment before, and I'm at a disadvantage. So now it's like, okay, we're playing, everyone's playing with the same ball, you see? So it's a sport. And then, you know, and the rules can change, but it's the sport, and it has particular, so it's 10 minutes. You have particular lifts. You compete, whoever does the most reps. You compete against people in your weight category. You compete against people at the same level, which is what kettlebell you're using. Professional using the heavy ones. Beginners using the light ones. Amateurs are using like medium heavy. You know, so, and then as many reps, whoever gets the most reps wins. That's a sport. It's not a style. Mm-hmm. Hard style is really, I would say the first and only, and you can say there's other styles, but hard style was basically just a branding to say that this is our school, this is our tribe. Mm-hmm. We call it hard style. But in terms of the terminology, hard style, well, that was borrowed. It's taken from the martial arts, which has been around for thousands of years, not just in the last 20. So, you know, in martial arts, there's the distinction hard style martial art, hard style karate. Mm. Okay, that's like Shotokan, Ishinryu, maybe not Ishinryu so much of the Okinawan, is more of a blend, hard, soft, you could say, but like Shotokan, Kyokushinkai, very like, you know, very boom, I'm gonna overpower you. It's like force against force, boom. And it's, I'm conditioning my bones. I'm hitting the maca warboard. I'm kicking the bamboo or whatever, toughening, hardening the body. It's a young man's game, okay? And it's like you're sacrificing the structure to make your body into a weapon. You worry about arthritis when you're 50 or whatever, okay? And that's the hard style. So it's like, oh, we're hard style kettlebell. So it's like, you know, it's like, that's hard stuff. Mm-hmm. I want tension. That's how I see it. Again, you ask me the question, I'm answering it in the way I see it. You ask somebody else, they might say, oh no, we have these principles, and okay, fine. But I'm one of the OG kettlebells. I was lifting kettlebells before most people even knew what kettlebells is. So of course my answer is going to be informed over all these years versus just some standard answer. Like, okay, hard styles, we adhere to these techniques and these principles. Because I don't believe in styles. It's like, I'm not trying to make the comparison and saying I'm Bruce Lee, or, you know, I'm not interested in comparing anything, but I will use that example and say in that way, I agree in what Bruce Lee kind of, when we think about Bruce Lee, people even now looking back, they kind of say like he was one of the, maybe the first MMA guy in a sense before MMA, because of his, he was not about style. He was not, let's not be bound by trend, you know, tradition. Let's transcend and whatever works. Yet, having said that, he had a foundation. He came from the Wing Chun.
Yeah.
He came from a system and a lineage and got to the level where he was skillful enough as a young master. Now he can create his own concepts and blend it.
Okay, so would you call that unorthodox style?
Eclectic, they would call it. They called it eclectic in the sense it's, okay, I think boxing is the best hands, so now it's boxing for hands, and I like the French foot fighting, the savate, and, you know, a judo is the best for, like, stand-up throws and wrestling for takedowns. And he was kind of piecing it together in his era in the 60s and 70s. Versus, you know, MMA now, it's like, okay, you study Muay Thai, you study Jiu-Jitsu, you study wrestling. There's your foundation. Maybe it's Sambo, maybe it's Judo, but it's like you have your, but even in the MMA have, you're still, your foundation's in one art. Like I came from kickboxing and then I transitioned. I came from wrestling and I transitioned, right? And so now you learn the other skills to fill in the blanks. And it's, and again, I'm not saying MMA is the ultimate either, because that's just something, and it comes down to the individual, but it's an evolution in the sense that now, compared to 30 years ago, there, we don't have those discussions that we're having still with kettlebell. People don't really talk about it anymore. Oh, karate is better than kung fu, and oh, judo is, you know, no, jiu-jitsu is the best ever. That was in the beginning, and it was branding. Again, the guys, the money behind the beginning was the jiu-jitsu guys, so they wanted the jiu-jitsu to win. when no one says, oh, jiu-jitsu is the best anymore. No, you say that guy is the best. And he comes from jiu-jitsu, but he crossed over and he's good with his hands. Or he comes from kickboxing. There's no one style where, oh, yeah, that the wrestler always beats everybody. Or, oh, the jiu-jitsu. No. It's this right now. Wait 2 years. Now the other guy's dominant again. The kickboxer is the best now. You know, so they all have to, and that's what I've done with kettlebells. Kettlebell sport is part of the process, is part of the journey. You can limit yourself and just do that, and now you're a kettlebell sport athlete, and that's your entire identity, the training that goes into that. And it's not just what people see, because you see the competition, but if you don't know the world, you don't see all the other cross training that needs to be done to, you just see, okay, the snatch and the clean and jerk. So, oh, that's all you do is two lifts. Well, we compete in two lifts. Okay. We do a lot of other stuff, right? Because athlete hard style. Okay. That's a school and they want to, but for me, it's like, I don't want to create robots. I don't want to create like a bunch of Steve Cotters that, oh, you have to, I want.
Isn't that good?
Masters. I want to contribute to the self development. So that the student becomes the master, and then you share your art, and that's how the world becomes educated in the different disciplines. And yeah, kettlebells is just one thing, but we can use the same approach to other types of education as well. So it's like, it's an art form. It's my style. Mm-hmm. Now, IKFF, that's my brand. That's my school of thought, my organization. You know, how do we do it? Is it kettlebell sport? Is it Gary Voice sport? No. Is it hard style? No. But we understand hard style. We know hard style very well. Okay. We achieve the highest levels within the hard style. Kettlebell sport. We know kettlebell sport. We, I'm talking about myself, but I'm also talking about Ken Blackburn. I'm talking about the founding of IKFF, you know, my right hand man. Kettlebell sport. I never took it to the highest level. I got into kettlebell sport in my mid-30s, but I achieved a good level and I know the technique. You know, I never became world champion in kettlebell sport. And that's not the point. The point is I put in some years and some reps. I put in my time, you see. And hard style, I put in my time. So it's like, it's the education. You need to know everything about kettlebells. Juggling. Okay, I don't build my whole thing based on kettlebell juggling. There is people that do that. There's professional kettlebell jugglers. Like, that's their whole. But I like to juggle, and I've practiced juggling, and I know how to juggle, and I can teach it, you know. And not when I'm inside in the nice floors, I don't do it too much. But, you know, if I'm outside in the beach, I'll do my juggling out there. So it's like there's different aspects, and it's just about the tool and the artist. And so you have to learn the fundamentals. You can learn fundamentals from hard style. You can learn fundamentals from IKFF. You can learn fundamentals from a kettlebell sport, you know, coach. But it's what you do after you master the fundamentals. That's where I'm talking about. It's, you know, where are you going to go with your art? And for me, it's like creation. It's all about creation, because how I want to flow with the kettlebell, that's how I do it. I'm not saying everyone needs to do it like that. Some people aren't going to be able to do what I do. You know? Other people do different stuff.
Yeah. Steve, on a, now back to a less serious note. So this is like my last question for you. So what are your plans for Friday nights for you or for your family? Maybe you can give me a list.
Tonight, Friday is like an off night in terms of no training. I trained a little bit with the kettlebell before we spoke, but as far as there's no jiu-jitsu for me on Fridays. And there's some really interesting fights tonight on Flow Grappling. flowgrappling.com. It's it's fight to win organization, so they're pro fights, and several of the guys from our jiu-jitsu family are fighting. But what's very exciting is my sensei is fighting for the first time after 2 years, because he had a serious wrist injury. So I'm going to actually be streaming that. I'm going to be watching those. Otherwise, you know, I'm pretty low key. I'm not going to go out partying. I got my audio books. I'm going to listen to some of my audiobooks. I have a little bit of customer engagement, some emails that I'm going to work with, and then just the jiu-jitsu fights, and that's it.
Okay. All right. All right, Steve, thank you so much for this interesting conversation.
Thank you so much.
Yep. So I really learned a lot from what we have been talking about today, what you have imparted to us. So yes, I learned a lot of that today, even the type of style, what's your take on all those things. So it's very, very useful. So I believe it's also very useful for the people who are listening. Thank you very much for this interview. And
thank you so much.
Yeah. I hope all of you stay safe and keep well, and happy Friday. So
happy Friday.
So catch you in your Instagram post. It's quite interesting when I see all the different type of people who sort of tag you in your post. So that's very nice to see.
Yeah, it's an amazing world to be able to connect with each other through these channels.
Yeah.
So I'm really grateful for that.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you so much for taking your time, an hour or so of your time today. Thank you very much.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And until bye-bye. Next time, we appreciate you listening without a doubt. Stirring up our blend of wellness to help you out. Glad we energize your soul, fire up your passion. Hope you take what you just heard, put it into action. On the journey, getting strong while you sipping on the Kobe, feeling good all day long. Holla at us next time, yeah, we'll see you then. Follow us on IG, go and tell a friend. When flavor meets fitness, this is Bo, check us out, yo.